Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sam Freedom Hour number 39. For those of you who have been following along, this is really not the first. This is really not the 39th Sam Freedom Hour, because the first two were only 15 minutes. Whether I'm saying this to be consistent or obnoxious, I will still leave that up for you to decide. Doesn't matter if they clone a T-Rex and it comes to attack my house. I'm going to say that at the beginning of every show, as long as the T-Rex hasn't eaten me. If you haven't been following along, you can find my blogs at myspace.com/Sam Freedom, which I've all but abandoned only because I am not sick of MySpace people in particular, like specifically, but sick of MySpace in general. I kind of laugh because the programming director here, Amy Domestico, I remember the day that she one time joked about how people would say they were leaving MySpace and then they would like show up again in like a month or so, just to kind of get back into the drama of things. You know, drama's addictive. And you have, she one day decided that she was done on MySpace, and I remember sitting there thinking, how can you be done on MySpace? It's kind of cool, you know, it's a good channel for blogging and expressing yourself and meeting people. And then I realized, you know, not too long afterwards, that she was right. I joked about it. I said that she would be back, too, like everybody else, and she wasn't. And I'm so happy because it lets me know that it is possible that there are people out there who really do grow up and leave MySpace and don't come back. As far as I know, Xanthan left. I mean, you know, it's kind of like what I laugh about. Xanthan used to be one of the most popular bloggers on MySpace. He'd post a blog, and, like, within 5 minutes, he'd have, like, 4 or 5 pages of comments without even replies to them. He would just get, like, massive amounts of commenting, and it was always like women tripping and falling over him. And I knew from like seduction, personal experience with seducing, studying seduction, and also just knowing the seduction crowd, that, you know, and also knowing how popular romance novels are, that women do get like that. But I was almost like nauseated by how sick it was, how they were tripping over him to like say their little cute sexual comment. And I swore to myself I would not go in that direction. I demonstrated in the very beginning that it was not difficult. I wrote a really good, sexually provocative blog titled, Doesn't Everybody Have a Cleaning Lady? If you go back to my blogs in the very beginning, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's expertly written, and it was pretty damn hot. But there's just something, like, obnoxiously, nauseatingly wrong about that, at least from my point of view. You know, not saying for him, but for me it was. It's just, there's something extremely shallow about it. You write a blog about a hookup, you know, like in the front of Penthouse magazines, and the next thing you know, you have like 400 totally, completely random female strangers telling you how hot they are and how much they want to fuck you, and I suppose it's good for the ego. And it might even get you a little bedtime, but is something just not right about it, as far as I'm concerned. The other aspects of MySpace, let's see, there's T. Brad Hudson, who, you know, it's funny, you mention anybody's name on, like, one of these radio shows, and there's all kinds of followers that run off and tell them, you know, oh, so-and-so talked about you on their radio show, and then the person comes in to listen to it, and because you didn't, like, coddle them first or, like, tell them that, you know, you were going to do it, they think it's a slight to them. And I just want to make sure that that's not the case with anybody I mention here. I have nothing against anybody. I'm not trying to seem cool or superior to anybody. I'm just musing on about my observations of MySpace, and so that brings me back to T. Brad Hudson, who, when I first met him, I was also nauseated by, like, this one blog he wrote, which is not a testament to him. It was a well-written blog, but it was something having to do with the 10 things that women want from a man, and I just grew sicker and sicker after reading each one until I almost, like, lost my lunch all over my keyboard. And so I wrote a message basically saying that any guy who did those things should basically, you know, shoot himself. And that didn't go over too well with him or his crowd. I mean, I didn't say it like that. I said it a little more harshly. I came in like a crashing rhino alpha male and ranting on about how that was like beta male stories and stuff like that. And I just wasn't thinking at the time. I mean, that's a tactic, actually. Sometimes you can come down on somebody's blog in kind of a slightly harsh manner, a controversial manner, or, you know, argumentative or debating or friction manner, and it creates interest. It gets people thinking. Some people hate you. Some people like you. But it can be fun, and it can advance the cause of blogging. But I came down a little bit hard in this blog, and he got upset, and everybody got upset. I got a lot of readers from it, actually, and a lot of loyal MySpace friends. But, you know, I wrote to him afterwards basically saying, look, it's clear to me that you're probably doing, like, some kind of a build-up to a book sale. I said, and I apologize if I came down a little bit too hard in your midst there. I said I wasn't intending to come down as hard as it seemed in review. And that blew over, and we became friendly after that. But that's just kind of like another aspect of MySpace. It's not just these He-Man penthouse type things that get women all crazy, blogs that get women crazy, but, you know, this also like what women want from a man type blogs, you know. And I don't really think it's a good thing for women or men or life in general when you take this I am woman, hear me roar feminist kind of route. And it's like a lot of the same women who are like, who believe in feminism or who want, you know, women to appear stronger in regards to their male counterparts, they're the same women who have, like, tolerated when people like Barbara Boxer have put down Condoleezza Rice for saying she's unfit for the job that she has, because how can you send people's kids off to war if you don't have any kids yourself, as if that's, you know, as if a woman who has no kids absolutely lacks sympathy or doesn't have relatives or of that age or friends who have kids, you know. So there's a kind of an oddness in that community of blogging to how would you say, disillusioned women in general, and that's just another aspect of the blogosphere. Then you have the Kevin's freaking blogosphere, and I don't even know if he's still out there or if he's had his account deleted for like the umpteenth time, but I mean, it's not a mystery when it happens, and I think he had like at one point 18,000 friends, and I think most of them weren't even like, they were all done through like a friend ad or somebody telling me, but who cares, right? This is MySpace. People have to do what they have to do. But his segments were, they appeal to a certain crowd, and once again, it may sound like I could possibly be denigrating that crowd, and I'm not. Some people like fucking fart humor and trash humor. Some people like bathroom, you know, toilet humor. Other people like Saturday Night Live type humor. Other people like, you know, some other kind of humor. It's all to each person's taste. But that was just another part of the MySpace blogosphere, and it didn't really appeal to me. It was like, it just didn't matter. You could throw a wig on and wear a woman's bra and make scat jokes, and like everyone would like, you get like 800 comments of people who thought it was funny. Of course, that leads us to like the really amazingly stripped down version of Kevin's freaking, which is Dare Murray, and how he just has like he does a simple blog on Yo Mama, and immediately fucking like 1,000 people will come out of the woodwork doing Yo Mama jokes. So that's another element of the blogosphere, is like kind of, you know, what people may disagree with me, but like kind of tasteless humor, you know. Then there was you get the other part of the blogosphere, which is like politics and news and stuff, and you have Doc Man Jay, who has his blog where all kinds of, you know, people come to discuss the politics of the day. And that's also a place where I frequented at one point, because when the Iraqi war started, I was a little bit, I was against the terrorists, and I didn't care to hear nothing else. I mean, we have to get the terrorists, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, it didn't seem to matter to, like, people on the left. They were not interested in fighting terrorism, even if they said they were. They seemed more interested in doing everything they could to hamstring George Bush or the Republicans, and that really just kind of infuriated me. I thought it was thoughtless, tasteless, and I sort of attributed it to a bunch of more younger people, or people who were older but hadn't grown up, who just for whatever reason unwittingly got a lot more media attention by the silly, stupid antics of people like Michael Moore and Cynthia Sheehan. And the lunatic fringe of the left started to become, at least appear on the media as if they were like the mainstream of the liberal democratic movement. And you'd have people like Hillary Clinton, who trying to be as thoughtful as possible, and Lieberman, you know, trying to be as thoughtful as possible, would say, hey, look, we can't commit to a timeline of pulling out of Iraq, and they would get like thrown under the bus. I can't say Hillary's been completely thrown under the bus, because she had a lot more influence than Lieberman, but, you know, the people who really were relying on her to put an end to the Iraq War, thinks she's a traitor now, you know. And Lieberman got thrown out of the bus by the Democrats in, I forget if it's Rhode Island or Connecticut, but he came back as an independent and crushed them, crushed that little thing called Ned Lamont. Any case, so Doc Manjay's blogs are about, you know, kind of right-wing conservatism. But, you know, I'm an independent who leans right, and while I've come down on his side many times, you know, the thing with political bloggers, it seems to me, is that they really just have zero objectivity, and they don't realize how important that is, that you have to be able to consider both sides of an argument, at least understand why things are the way they are to reconcile them. That doesn't mean, for instance, that you have to understand and coddle the terrorists to end terrorism. Of course, there's times when you need to blaze a friggin' hole through their apartment, you know, but but you don't want to become a reactionary where you're like rabid every time somebody disagrees with you and you start calling them names like bipolar and freaking maniac. And I'm guilty of that myself. You know, I've called people on the left morons and idiots and stuff. But, you know, it's not because they were on the left. It was because of the ideology. You know, if somebody believes in a stupid idea, it makes them stupid as far as I'm concerned. But when I disagree with somebody and when you disagree with somebody and they call you bipolar, that's just juvenile. And that's kind of what Doc, you know, gets into every once in a while. In fact, he wrote to me one time in an email, like virtually foaming at the mouth, and I couldn't figure out why, and I tried to get him to calm down and explain it to me, and he said I was a traitor of some kind. And then when I went and investigated what he was talking about, it turned out that somebody had created a fake profile of mine and commented on some liberals' message boards, kind of backstabbing Doc Manjay, but he didn't really take the time to go simply see that the profile was a fake one. He just came, you know, screaming at me in my inbox, and I guess we kind of all do that, but that reactionary thing happens, seems to happen in the political blogs more than any place else. And once again, you know, out of all the people I've mentioned so far, I think he's probably the one most likely to consider this traitorous because I'm talking about him. But you know what? So fucking what? You know, it's a harsh world. Get used to it. Grow up. But that's just another part of MySpace. You know, it's the political side of MySpace. Oh, looky here, 858. It looks like I have a caller. I didn't expect one tonight. I've really kind of gotten, you know, a little bit disillusioned, not with having callers, but just in general, the idea of having complete strangers call into my show. And we also had like two or three callers who were very cool, but they called in every single time, and it got to be a little repetitious, I think. And I started to do what were monologues. And I didn't even announce this until the last minute because I've enjoyed doing monologues. As you can see, I just can go on and on without even stopping. But I've got somebody calling in now, and I don't recognize the number from any of my previous callers, so let's see what happens here. And 858, welcome to the show. What's your name?
My name is Jen.
Oh, hey, Jen. How you doing?
I was just calling to shut up that monologue.
Yeah, you know something? You fake a different name every time. You were Myrtle last time, too.
I'm Jen. I'm always Jen.
Are you really?
I've never called your show before, actually.
No, you sound exactly like somebody who called before, except she was putting on a pretty good fake accent.
No, I never. Well, my husband's British, so sometimes I pick up a little bit of that, but I'm totally Californian, California, San Diego, actually.
Yeah, well, let me ask you a question here. Maybe you can be a little bit more honest about your motivation, because if you really wanted to, you know, stop the monologue, you could just kind of, like, you know, switch to a different channel kind of thing.
Hey, I'm being sarcastic. Chill.
Yeah, I know. So what I'm trying to find out now is what prompted you to call in.
No, I was listening to your monologue, and I was listening to what you were saying, and I had a question that kind of fascinates me.
Sure.
You call yourself a libertarian?
No, I said I'm more independent with right leanings.
Okay. So when did you suddenly decide to go that way? Because I think it's funny how many people are suddenly these days calling themselves independents or libertarians or some other name rather than Republican or Democrat.
I understand. Well, before I answer that, what's your interest in asking? Like,
I have a show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Jen, or as some people know me, Jen of the Jungle. I do My Point Radio, and I'm actually going to start my own solo show soon. My blog is screwliberals.com. I'm totally right wing. You know, I'm not Myrtle or whoever you're talking about.
That's okay.
About.
She said she did it with her own show too. That's why there was there was a similarity in like the depth of the voice.
I haven't even started. I believe you. I've been doing My Point Radio, which we just finished our show, and I'm fired up, so I had to call someone else.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Sometimes after I'm done with my show, I'll kind of like hop on the programming guide and see what's going on. Feeling, you know.
Well, and you've never listened to our show. We're always in the top 10.
You're in the top 10?
We're always in the top 10. We dropped down, obviously, right now because we just did a show. We'll be probably back up again by tomorrow. But My Point Radio, my co-host's name is Dave, and we're legit, but I'm not Myrtle.
I believe you. I'm going to have to check in on that. But the thing is I'll answer your previous question, too. One of the reasons I haven't listened to too many political radio shows out here is I do get a lot of really good, like, syndicated radio on the air from people like, you know, Jay Severin and Michael Graham, kind of, and I'm also a Savage fan. But when I listen to a lot of political shows, it almost just seems like a lot of the people are just, you know, they're just saying the same things over and over and over again. And I like to consider, you know, as an independent, and I'll tell you why I say that in a minute, I really like to try and see both sides of an issue, okay? Rather than, I really was, like, anti-liberal in the beginning, but I started to have to realize, why are these people the way they are? Is it truly just a mental illness? Is it,
it's drugs.
Well, I think sometimes they're their own worst enemies, and they end up marginalizing themselves because they don't know any other way to integrate, and except to come up with some type of a conspiracy theory that fills in the gaps in their thinking, because they're not great analyzers, that's for sure.
No, definitely not.
But a lot of the shows started to say a lot of the same things, but I love to consider things like when you hear about Blackwater, okay, you know the private mm-hmm. army.
Yeah, they're trying to actually build a like a base or a camp here in I'm in San Diego, and they're trying to build one actually in the back county out here, and there's a big hullabaloo over it. So yeah, I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, I like to really think about things like that. I like to really consider them rather than just thinking, well, you know, this is a war against Iraq, and we have to do what we have to do. It's like I like to think, wait a minute, you know, there are other bigger motivations going on here. Is the country being sold out? You know, on one hand we're pumping our fists in the air, chanting, like, you know, go America, and we're behind Bush a little bit for the war. And the next thing you know, he wants to, like, integrate the America with the Euro or the Amaro, whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like you start to hear these little things in the background. It makes you wonder. So I like to question things. And I was with a friend who's a Republican, and we went into a local coffee shop, which had, you know, I think I can't say this is true for all of them, but this coffee shop was very liberal indeed. And I looked around, and I said something to him. He looked at me, and he goes, what are you talking about? You're a liberal. And I said, I said, look at all the liberals. And he goes, what are you talking about? You're a liberal. And I stopped and I thought about it. He is Republican. And then I realized at the point, I'm either independent or, as one of my blog readers, Calvin, put it very nicely, he says that he and I were probably much more of a liberal Democrat like 10 or 15 years ago than we are today. We've kind of been pushed to the right. So maybe I'm saying independent because I can't relate to being...
Well, you see, it's hard because I was what is today's definition of a liberal. I mean, we call them liberal or Democrat, whatever you, progressive, whatever name they're calling themselves this week, Moonbat, you know, libtard, leftard, whatever.
Yeah.
But they, I was back actually when we first, I was in high school and just started being able to vote right at the time we went to the Gulf the first time, back in 92, 93, and that was all heating up back then. And, you know, and in fact, my school, you know, we marched on our little city hall. And, I mean, it's freaking hilarious. But, you know, and I still wear Birkenstocks. But, you know, we were, you know, all our boyfriends are going to get sent to war. The draft is coming because the media was telling us, oh, the draft's going to start again. And the media was hounding us saying, oh, the draft's going to start again. So all of our boyfriends are going to get sent to war. And, you know, we're going over there for oil. It was absolute repeat of what's happening now. And then a couple years went by and I went, wait a minute, we were helping a sovereign nation that was being attacked by a dictatorship. We didn't get any oil out of it. And I'm one of the firm believers that thinks that we should have finished a job and taken Saddam out back then. But
yeah.
So I didn't care about anything other than the fact that I think we should have finished the job then, but that took me several years. And
I think back then they listened to the intelligence reports, which said there would have been civil war, there would have been Iran getting involved, all the things that just kind of that came out in 2003 that was kind of ignored up until recently.
They're happening now.
Yeah, and it would have happened back then. And I think Senior knew that because remember Senior was the head of the CIA.
The problem though back then is that unlike this time, back then we were met more as liberators than we were this time, although there was some of that this time. Back then, they were like, oh, thank God you're here. Someone's got to save us from this guy.
Well, back then, we were liberating people who wanted to be liberated, clearly, and now we're liberating people who aren't sure.
Well, back then, we were liberating people that wanted to be liberated, and then we went, fuck you. I'm sorry, you rated everyone or or mature. I'm sorry, I don't want to swear.
That's okay. You mean you really think we abandoned them?
But, yeah, we did, and they were slaughtered. They were slaughtered after we pulled out. I mean, not on the scale of Vietnam, but Saddam went into all those people that threw their guns down and went in and slaughtered their families and slaughtered many more, including the Kurds, and he went crazy, slaughtering everyone he can, including his own family members. So when we went back in the second time, I don't think the Iraqi people really thought, oh, well, they don't really mean it, and we got rid of Saddam, and a few of them came out, and I have a lot of friends that are serving over there. We have a lot of service members that call our show and tell us what's going on over there, and there are a lot of people over there that are happy. I mean, even Fallujah, for example, has a booming economy right now, but you don't hear that on the media. You'll never hear anything positive on the media right now.
Well,
but,
you know, you're partly right on that, but the funny thing is I do see some really good stuff come up every once in a while, and I just wish that it could all be, like, put in one place, like a scrapbook. Because I saw some amazing inroads into, like, Anbar province. There was, like, one particular guy who was, like, a lieutenant colonel. And he, like, they gave him some flexibility. And he went in, and instead of dealing with the high-level sheiks who would all run to Jordan, you know, who, like, they did have a lot of power and influence, but they all ran to Jordan and kind of were tentative on helping out. He actually got together, like, 200 mid-level sheiks in, you know, the Sunni area. And he, like, made, you know, guarantees to them. He says, look, if you tell your people to, like,
kill,
we'll work with you. And he says, first of all, the car bombings dropped drastically. And he says that the people that we train from your province to be police, we'll send them back to be police in your communities. And he said all of a sudden people started joining up left and right. So they had the help.
That isn't what you're hearing in the mainstream media.
No, it's not. No, it was actually on the front page of the USA Today, which is – That's a big paper, but I didn't see it mentioned on the TV media.
Or on the internet, except unless you go to a right wing blog. 99.9% of the time is the only place you're going to hear that. So
right.
You know, the situation over there, it is bad. I'm one of those people that fully thinks that this war sucks donkey balls in the sense that we're not fighting it right. And it literally sucks donkey balls because that's what we're doing. I mean, we're sucking donkey balls. And we're not, you know, the men that are over there fighting, men and women that are over there fighting, their hands are tied. You know, they can't shoot someone. Someone can shoot at them and kill them,
yeah.
And they drop their gun. They can't return fire. You know, Sadar's come out again with another thing today, and he's bitching and whining. It's like, why is this guy able to live? He's killed thousands of people over there. His machinations and what he's doing over there has killed many people over there.
Well, you know what it is? They're using him. I think they're using him as a like leverage. Like, in other words, he may be like a thorn in our side, but he's also a thorn in the side of people who are our enemies, you know, or who are bothering us. So I think it's kind of one of those things. But damned if you do, damned if you don't.
No, damn, he needs to go. He's no better.
Oh, you're talking about Sadar, right? Is that what you said?
Al-Sadar.
Yeah.
He's Iran's puppet in Iraq.
Yeah.
Just like this, like the situation that's going on in Lebanon right now. I mean, you know, the war in Lebanon is not between Lebanon and Palestine or anyone else. It's a war between Syria and Iran for control of Lebanon as a proxy state. Syria's pissed off they got kicked out of there.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But, you know, the other thing about that is I have a friend from Lebanon who, one of his friends just got back, and he's got some back avenue channels, and he said that there is some dealings going on behind the scene between America and Iran. They're kind of like obviously not talking about it publicly, but where Iran is going to be offered kind of an ultimatum and some concessions to abandon Hezbollah or at least get them to blend into the community and put their weapons down and become a political party. And he's so happy about that. He says there's all different kinds of peoples and, you know, diverse peoples in Lebanon. The only ones who can't get along with anybody are the Hezbollah. So
that may come
to an end quicker.
You've got several different militias and factors there. In fact, have you heard of Bridget Gabriel?
Yeah, I don't know where I've heard of her from, though.
She wrote a book called Because They Hate.
Bridget Gabriel, isn't she a radio show host, too?
Gabriel,
that sounds way too familiar.
Congress of Truth is her website. She's written a bestseller called Because They Hate. She's a Lebanese woman.
Oh, yes, yeah, I know who she is. Is she Lebanese?
She's Lebanese,
yeah,
and she was there during the early 80s, during the big wars down there.
Yeah, she's very, very personable, and she gets a lot of death threats, too. I know that.
She's, Yeah, she gets a lot of death threats. As a matter of fact, we had her on our show, and we actually ended up going well over the hour. I mean, it was like 2.5 hours, but it was archived. And, you know, you listen to what she's saying and what she's talking about over there, and it gets really frustrating. It's like beat your head against the wall because there just seems to be almost no solution. I mean, Lebanon used to be a paradise. People would go there on vacation. Hollywood stars would go there on vacation. And unfortunately, starting with Carter, allowing the mullahs and allowing things that he allowed, it's become, God, there's no word for it. I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's sort of reverting back to the Wild West a little bit.
Yeah, well, you start going like the people go nuke Mecca, and you kind of go, well, yeah, maybe you're gonna have to.
Some party that thinks
I'll never advocate the use of nuclear weapons anywhere. I've read the book On the Beach by Neville Shute. It gave me nightmares for the rest of my life. I will never advocate.
Oh, man, you'll have to check it out. But you know what surprised me was that while Israel and Hezbollah are fighting in the southern Lebanon, that there were I didn't realize there were so many Americans at, what do they have, like the American University over there or something? It just surprised me that, like, in a country where there are people, I know there's all kinds of people there, but, like, why wouldn't they be targets, you know? I didn't quite get that, to tell you the truth.
They are targets, and as a matter of fact, there's already a bulletin out right now for anyone that's in Lebanon that's of American descent or look. And the problem is they're talking about Americans like me. I mean, although people think I look Filipino, I'm Scottish-American, you know.
Well, a lot of Lebanese married American people and came back to Lebanon.
Correct, and because Lebanon's beautiful. I mean, it's a phenomenal place. I mean, and there's so many places in the Middle East, you go like, oh, these are beautiful places. I'd love to go over to the Middle East on a vacation, like going to Hawaii or going to England or going someplace else, but you can't. You can't go there.
Right.
And, I mean, look at Daniel Pearl. I mean, look at some of these other people who have gone over there. You just go over there, you become a target right now. And it's not right now. It's something that's been happening for, you know, a long time, and people seem to forget that, and the left seems to forget that. They think, oh, this is Bush's war. He's caused all these problems.
Oh,
well, prior to 2001, 9/11, we were attacked, the first World Trade Center bombing, the coal bombing, the Marine barracks, the embassies.
Sure.
I mean, if you go to thereligionofpeace.com, which is a website that basically like chronicles exactly how many terrorist attacks from perpetrated in the name of Islam on a daily basis.
Well, let me ask you, though, do you ever take a break from this stuff, though? Because, I mean, I certainly get into it, but after a while it starts to drain on you, you know? It's like you have to remember, and that's why I know a lot of people who are on the right or who support the war are Christian of origin. That's not obviously not everybody, but, and, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, in the Christian religion, there's kind of like the commandment to honor a Sabbath of some kind, and I think if ever there was a time where that was most important, it's even now. I mean, that's part of the Jewish tradition, and Jews have seen their fair share of wars since the beginning of time, and they all still know that if they can, they take that Friday, Saturday off, you know?
Unless I'm an atheist,
Unless they're being attacked, but you can get burnout with this stuff, too.
Oh, you totally can. I'm an atheist, so I don't have a Sabbath, but
impunity, yeah.
I'm one of those rare atheists. We just had
must love Christopher Hitchens, huh?
There you go. I take breaks from it. I usually take breaks on the weekends. I kind of post a blog on Friday night and won't come back till Sunday. You know, and this is a 3-day weekend, although we got a show, a Memorial Day show on Monday. But, I do take breaks from it. And,
well, you know what, Jenna? I've got somebody who's been sitting here for like 13 minutes. And let's bring them in and see if they have any questions for you or me, or see what maybe they have something they want to offer. I recognize the area code, but it could be one of two people. And
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, one's a military recruiter, and the other is a student who's, you know, in the Virginia and Washington, D.C. area. So.
Sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, let's see what's up. Hey, 502, is that who I think it is?
You better be able to believe it there, Sam.
Oh, hold on a second.
That's funny shit.
Fat Kid 6 Delta, welcome to Sam Freedom Hour number 39, which is not really the 39th Sam Freedom Hour because the first two were only
15 minutes.
That's right.
What's going on, Sam?
Say hi to Jenna, Fat Kid.
Who is this? I'm sorry. I'm a guest on this show. I don't know what goes on.
That's okay. Say, I'm telling him to say hi to you.
My name's Fat Kid 6D. How you doing?
Fat Kid. I'm fine tonight. How are you?
Not too bad.
Fat Kid is one of our, he's a regular caller to the show.
Uh-huh.
And he has his moments where he's very humorous, but he's a military recruiter. So
don't come to Santa Cruz.
You might be good at the show.
Don't come to Santa Cruz.
Don't come to Santa Cruz and get bricks thrown at you.
Oh yeah. Well, wasn't that where they had the firebombing down there?
Yep.
I'm
in San Diego, but I'm a Californian, so I always keep an eye on what's happening to recruiting office. I'm from the Bay Area too, so.
What's your fucking idiots back there did that?
No shit.
We've had some pretty interesting shows. There were times when, like, Fat Kid and I, like, I also do a lot of internet marketing, and I feel I'm pretty good at it.
Actually, I'm an internet marketer.
Well, we can talk more about it at some point, yeah. I mean,
yeah, let's look up.
Well, you know, I was joking with Fat Kid about ways that he could, you know, little things he could do to get, like, recruitment levels up if he needed to.
Yeah.
And he didn't believe me, but I turned into, like, I started pretending to be, like, a Vietnamese guy, and I was telling him, we were talking about how the people on the campus that he works at or that he has worked at were only interested in how to grow better beets. And I was telling him, you know, pull up in a Bradley, towing behind you a big cart of beets, and see if you join the army, we will show you how to grow better beets. You know, better beets. But it was a good like 30-minute back and forth that we had with a few of the people.
That did go on for quite a while, didn't it?
Yeah.
Can't you guys like show us how to grow a beer tree or something? I mean, who wants beets?
They like them for whatever reason.
That's funny.
Yeah.
How is that? Is being a military recruiter right now? I mean, you're obviously probably one of the. You're not going to be voted in as prom king or anything. I mean, it's going to be a tough job right now.
Yeah, it sucks. But I only got another 2 years left out here, and then I can finally go back to the actual army.
Weren't you trying to get into Blackwater too?
I wouldn't probably do anything like that unless I was getting on out.
So you want to go back into active military, or?
Well, I am active military, but they've got me out here recruiting for 3 years, and I just passed over the year mark, and after that, I'll be able to go back to the regular Army.
And you want to?
Yes, by all means.
But why would you want to? We're at war right now, and
okay, I signed up.
Oil.
But you want to know what? I signed up to be a soldier. That's part of my job.
So you're going to go kill innocent babies over in Iraq?
All right. Are you one of those same ones that were probably spitting at my dad when he came home from Vietnam?
No, dude, I'm playing devil's advocate
right
now.
Digging you
up.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I'm just asking questions.
Believe
but,
me, I'm not.
They're not all over there killing innocent babies. Yeah, we got some fucking idiots in the military, in all branches. But not everything is all about killing babies.
Let me get my finger on the beep button here.
I can. Oh.
No, I'm kidding around.
No, I mean this is beautiful because no, actually, as a matter of fact, I was at a gas. Are you familiar with Miramar Air Force Base out here in San Diego?
Somewhat.
Yeah. Well, Miramar, we got a lot of Marines out here. It's a Marine base, and you know, obviously, I work right there too. And the guys are always at the gas station or at the sandwich shop or wherever, and some bitch. Like, really actually went up and did what I've never seen in my entire life and spit two guys in uniform. She actually spit on them. And I won't...
Look who it is.
What?
Hi, bitch.
No, then it's just a tape I had. You were talking
about... Oh, okay. They call me a bitch? Do I mean
that? He does it quite often.
Okay. Well, I am a bitch. But anyway, this bitch actually spit on these two guys. Well, I spit on her. And I couldn't help myself, you know, but I'd never, I mean, I hocked a loogie back on her. It was beautiful.
Good.
I mean, I hocked it back, and I think I was having a sinus infection that week. It was beautiful. But she absolutely hated the guys, and I started fighting with her. I mean, not physically, but I mean, I'm arguing with her, and then I finally did. I mean, she spit on them, I spit on them. The guys just saluted me and laughed. It was beautiful. But
you know, not that I would do it, but you know what's so funny? Like, I always think of, like, little ways of getting at people like that. And I really shouldn't even say it on radio tape.
Why not?
So I'll leave. Well, you know, like, for instance, when the people were rioting in France, I thought, why wouldn't somebody just like drive like a gasoline truck up there, and or just like go through with a backpack of gasoline and just with a hose coming out and just walk through the crowd, just, you know, quietly trailing gasoline through the crowd and then just you know what I mean?
Which people rioting in France? They have riots there every day.
Well, you know, the ones that were causing trouble for everybody.
But are still rioting, by the way. It's been about 2 years now, and they're still rioting in France. But
well,
yeah, I have a really hard time. I mean, my radio show is, you know, we concentrate on having a lot of soldiers on. We're live from Iraq often. Actually, on Memorial Day, we'll have Robert Smith, who's a corporal over in Iraq. He's serving in Basra. He's going to be on, and you know. I love these guys. I mean, I'm a pussy. Obviously, I didn't sign up.
That doesn't mean you're a pussy.
As a matter of fact, a couple years ago, I was challenged to it, and I actually called the recruiting office, and I'm probably in the books now. I get sent mail and, you know, recruit, you know, or sign up today, and I got a T-shirt and everything, but I've got such a bad back, I probably couldn't do anything other than sit at a keyboard all day, and even that sucks. But
well, you know, I apologize for not saying this, but why don't you also give out your information for your radio show so people listening can find it?
It's my Point Radio. My Point Radio, Blog Talk Radio, / My Point. We're on, we kind of mix it up, actually. We're usually on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Well, Wednesdays at 7:30 a.m. and Saturdays at 6 p.m. Pacific time. I'm actually going to start my own show. I'm going to go solo, but I'm going to still do My Point. It's going to be called Jen's Jungle Republic, and I'll be starting it soon. And because I like to talk, obviously.
No, come on.
Talk.
Have you,
That's why I liked your monologue. That's what got me on here. But we like to have the soldiers on. We had a Blue Star Mom on last week, and it was really. Hard listening to her. You know, she's talking about her son. I don't know. Well, obviously, you probably know about the three young men that were taken hostage.
You mean the Gold Star Moms?
No, actually, the Blue Star Moms.
Okay, I know about that.
The Blue Star Moms are the moms of soldiers that are not Gold Star Moms.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
The Blue Star Moms are soldiers that are still alive,
right.
Unlike the Gold Star Moms. And they offer support groups, babysitting, you want to talk, you want to vent. I mean, people forget the fact that these soldiers go off to war, and you know, we were talking to a guy that was over in Iraq last week. He's been over there for a year. She's alone for the first time. She's got 2 9-year-old kids, and, you know, it's tough on the families, and people forget about that. And without support, it's even tougher. So,
my question to all that is, where are the units, family support groups back home?
There's so many of them. Oh, there's so much support back home. All people have to do is just, like, turn their computer on. If they don't, pick up a phone.
No, what I'm saying is the unit that soldier is in. He has a wife and 2 children at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that unit has what's called a family support group at that base where he's stationed at. How come that family support group is not helping her out?
Oh, the problem with them is she was one of those, and this actually happens a lot, and this is something that's probably hard for you as a recruiter. She was in Iowa, and he was out of, I think, Virginia. So he was out of Virginia, and they kept their house in Iowa, so they weren't.
Gotcha. She didn't move along with him. Okay, I understand.
And,
got it.
And so they stayed there, and he's actually he was actually a medic and a great guy. But
you know, I have a quick question. I have a question about the about war statistics. I've always wondered. You know, of course, it bothers me whenever I hear about somebody else dying because I always know there's like a family on the other side of that. It's just going to be like totally horrified to get the news. But you know, I think we've forgetting just, you know, casualties for a moment, there's actually been about somewhere in between 3,500, 4,000 deaths, I think, correct? And
yeah,
I think the liberal left always focuses on that. And I wonder, and I know this may sound like a reach, but I really do wonder, how many of those people would have died in, like, normal accidents in America, like, on a daily basis from either domestic disputes, you know, like... I mean, everything. It could be whether it's a domestic dispute with jealous boyfriends or whether it's a traffic vehicular accident, whether it's, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, you can look at any stat. I mean, I live in Southern California. there's like 63 deaths a day or whatever on the freeway. I mean, it times that by 365 days of the year, and you've...
Exactly. But I wonder if with 100... How many troops do we have over there? 150,000, 180,000?
We're at about 180 right now.
I really wonder, with 180,000 of them overseas, how many, like, drunk driving deaths have, like, been... have been lessened. I just wonder, you know, that could be an interesting statistic to counter that, some of the...
Actually, you want to know what? Since we have been over in Iraq and Afghanistan, currently we got a little over 283,000 soldiers deployed in about 80 different countries.
Yeah.
Speaking outside of that, since 2003, when we started this whole hullabaloo, actual DUI deaths have risen.
Interesting.
By 2%.
Okay.
Do you think that's tied into the war, or are you implying?
Do I think it's tied into the war? No, I think it's just tied in. I don't think it's tied in at all. I think what it is just people are just a little bit stupider, and they don't pay attention to what the fuck they're doing.
No shit.
No, but it is interesting. I always just did wonder, though, if having 280,000 people deployed around the world somehow decrease the death statistics. Any death statistics?
It depends on, like, where you say deploy. Like, for example, are you guys familiar, have you heard of a blogger named Jarhead John?
Yeah, I heard that name.
Okay.
I've heard of him.
All right. John is a good friend of mine. He's over in Okinawa. He's not going to get hit by anything over there. I mean, he's except for a golf ball.
Right.
You know, I mean, he plays golf every Saturday, you know. The guy is, like, just hanging out. So it's like, you know, it depends on where you're deployed, what you're... risk factor is. And if you start looking at some of the deaths that we've had over in Iraq, for example, how many of them are actually combat deaths?
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at. I just wonder if the death rate, because of this particular skirmish, is actually lower than if people weren't deployed over there. You know what I mean? I'm just always thinking, because, you know, I always hear some of the silly, I consider them silly arguments coming from people on the left, and they harp on, like, a number. Like, when the 3,000th person died, you know, they made, like, a big friggin', I hate to say it, but it was like a celebration for them because they wanted to get out. It's like, oh, here's the 3,000th one dead, you know. And you almost want to say to them, you know what, 5,000 people, more people actually lived than died last year because, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I just wondered if there's a statistic like that. Maybe it's something that we're not going to figure out right here, right now. But
well, no, if you think about it, they've been over there for, what, 4 years now?
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're at, like, I think around 3,500. We'll say 3,500 for the, you know, benefit. That's, God, and I hate saying things like that. That's, like, nothing. I mean, I'm not saying their deaths are nothing. I'm saying that's
no, it makes
nothing.
It makes it a skirmish, basically.
You know, it really is. I mean, it's amazing. And that starts speaking to, like, where the military is at with, you know, how much more advanced it is versus, you know, previous wars.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, fat kid, but in World War II, didn't, like, 3,500 people die in, like, one day?
Yeah, that was on D-Day alone.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, one day. So, and that's, again, it's hard to say that because you're kind of going, like, yeah, you know, 3,500 people are dead. Yay, whatever, you know, it's just one day. And that's the thing, but...
It is. It's hard, you know, and when you try to explain that to people, you know, we've got 3,312, I think, is the actual number right now, dead since we've been there since 2003. All right? At the same time, you can turn around and look at some of the Vietnam War statistics, like you just said, you know, D-Day during World War II, 3,500 in a day. Turn around and do the same thing with Vietnam. We were losing anywhere from 32 to 4,000 every month while we were over there.
Every month.
Because of the way some of the fighting was going on.
Every month. I mean, people don't look at those kind of numbers and just go, and then you start looking at the statistics of the soldiers that we've lost in Iraq that have been lost from, you know, helicopter accidents or, you know, Humvees flipping or, you know, just suicides, unfortunately, and different situations like that would have happened anyway.
Right.
And, I mean, again, I live in San Diego, which is a military town. I mean, we have accidents down here. We've had, and unfortunately, you know, most of them aren't too bad, and people don't die, but sometimes they do. And we've got Pendleton right up the road, and things happen up there, and it happens all the time. So considering we've been in war for 4 years and only only, and I hate to say it, it's hard to say it, but only 3,500 people, and I'm not saying anything about the fact that every single one of them.
Well, isn't it funny that we have to say that, though, because there's always somebody like on the opposition side that says, oh, only 3,500?
Yeah,
like, you meant that? And then you have to preface everything these days.
No, but I'm not saying it because I give a flying fuck what they have to say.
Yeah.
That's not why I'm saying it, because I couldn't give a shit what they have to say. I mean, I really don't. I'm saying it because I don't want, if someone's listening that has someone that they lost over there, to think that I'm... don't think that every life that was lost is important.
Unless they're liberals, I think that they're more rational than that, because, you know, a lot of the people who think that way and a lot of the people who look at this as, you know, look at this as like a, like 3,300 is like a massive amount. These are people, I think, who are, you know, fairly young and have never been through, they were not in their mature years in any type of a war year, and they or they're the liberal holdouts from the previous war era. And, you know, they're the ones who they don't have the stomach for war. You know, they don't realize, shit, people die, you know, because it's the MTV generation. You know, you turn your TV on and it's like happiness and, you know, you just talk to your buddies and you text message them and you have a great time and just let's all have fun and get high and do X, and there's all kinds of designer drugs out. And it's like, you know, we become more hedonistic and more pleasure-oriented, so that even a small skirmish with 3,300 dead is going to create like these massive waves amongst the younger crowds, I think.
Well, I mean, put it in perspective. On 9/11, 2,996 people died in an hour.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, 2,996 people died in an hour from 19 guys on planes. So put that in. I mean, where is that perspective? That's what's killing me. There's no perspective out there. People going, oh, you know, 3,500 people died in 4 years of war. And 2,996 people died in basically an hour. You know, I don't know what's happening in this country. Like, people are just, I like to call it a microwave country, and people just want things to happen in 2 seconds, and they expect to, you know, put it in and it finishes, but it's frustrating. And I Fat Boy, man, you as a recruiter, what are the recruiting numbers? Are they down, are they up, or how are they going?
They're not really down. I mean, we haven't really noticed. I mean, it's hard as shit getting people in. But we still have the same number. I mean, we're not hurting by any month. I mean, 1 month we might be down, but the next month it usually comes right back.
Yeah, and that kind of speaks against the fact that this whole country's, you know, again, I mean, obviously with my blog is anti-liberal, and so I get a lot of trolls. I mean, screwliberals.com, they obviously don't like me, and that's pretty, I mean, I'm asking for it with the domain name alone.
Sure.
But, you know.
Well, no, here's where my independent thinking comes in here, is I don't automatically think that reenlistment rates, you know, not being super down means that, you know, people are really for the war. I think a lot of them, you know, a lot of them get good benefits from it. I mean, unemployment's at its lowest, I guess, in the United States, and maybe reenlisting is the most convenient thing to do. And, you know, for 3,300 soldiers have died, that means 277,000 didn't, that are deployed these days. You know what I'm saying? So those 277,000, they're probably like, hey, you know, it's fairly simple. I'll sign up for another stint. And I wouldn't doubt there's a lot of people that do actually enjoy being over in Iraq, but I don't think there's a lot of people, and it's actually an honor and it's prestigious when people come back and say that they've served their country. You know, they can walk tall and feel proud about it. And so I think a lot of the redeployment rates are also because, you know, there is some security and education and benefits in the Army, in the military.
The problem with what you just said, though, you said they can come back and walk tall and be proud of it. Well, they can in certain places around certain people, but there are certain people in certain places they can't do that. And that's the parallel to Vietnam, where it's starting to become ugly in some situations. I mean, some of the bigger protests, the gathering of eagles, there were some confrontations there.
Well, let me ask you this. Wait a minute. Once again, is this something, though, that we see it on the media so we think it's more prevalent than it is? Because I've never yet, throughout the whole course of this war, I've never come across anybody who's dared to open their mouth. And they'll open it in opposition of the war, but they won't dare put a soldier down.
You'll never see that on the mainstream media. Are you kidding me?
No, what I'm saying is, like,
you'll never see it in the media, but you will see it in person.
Yeah,
well, I guess what I'm saying is, do you really think it's like really an issue? Like, it's really widespread? Or do you think it's just?
I don't think that one's really widespread.
It's just
that one is kind of like just hit and miss with whenever you're out. I've experienced it maybe once since the war's taken place. Myself.
Yeah.
Well, that's one out of one right there.
Say again?
That's one out of one right there.
Yeah, but I mean, I've only experienced it once, and it was, you know, kind of low-key. It wasn't anything drastic or nothing like that. I was taking a enlistee down to enlist in, and it happened to be on September 11th of last year. Walked in to get some coffee at a little BP station, and this lady saw me in uniform, and she just started going off the mouth, fuck me, I'm killing babies, I'm about to have this kid sent over to Iraq and be killed. He started fighting with her, and I told him, and I was like, look, just calm down. Don't worry about what she says. She's got a right to voice her opinion.
What is it with gas stations, man? Every time I run into a situation, it's a gas station.
Well, gas stations are a cultural flashpoint. You know, it's like where everyone in America that, think about this, everyone needs gas, black, white,
that's
green,
true.
Red, Hispanic, or whatever. So that's where every single culture runs into each other. Everything, every class, every culture, it all happens. Listen, you know, the reason I know this and the reason my speaking has picked up so fast is because my family, we owned a very prolific chain of gas stations for 30 years, even during the Iran oil crisis. And I'll tell you something, I have seen, I should just do shows on what happens in gas stations.
I don't even want to know. But I tell you, almost every situation I've had, and some of them have been good. There was one situation where actually two Marines' car broke down half a block away from a gas station, and about seven or eight of us went down and helped them push the car to the gas station, and everyone that was there was like, you know, hey, thank you for your service. And I mean, that was really moving, and it was really touching, and it was just really cool. And they were kids. I mean, they were kids.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I'm 32, and I can look at them and say they were kids, and they're fresh recruits, and they were beaming, and they were just so happy, you know, with the positive, you know, result. And so that was a positive story. But I see, you know, even the ones that don't say anything, but you can see, like, you know, some guy or some chick standing over there. For some reason, it's always chicks.
Yeah, well, you know, I was at a yard sale with a woman who was, like, hardcore, like, you know, liberal. And she was talking about the war, and I said a few things to her, and, like, she's like, no, no, no. And she went into, like, Abu Ghraib, all the talking point stuff. And there was this old salt there with, like, a Navy hat on, like, mm-hmm. you know, with his ship that he was on. And this is, like, a Pearl Harbor type guy, you know. And I could see he looked at me, and I looked at him, and we both, like, shook our heads.
Rolled your eyes.
And he, I still wanted to look around, but he started walking down, like, the driveway to his car. And I made sure I walked up next to him as I was, like, I was leaving, and I was. And I said to him, look, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion in this country, but I want to let you know there's more of us that appreciate, you know, what you did for us.
I think with Memorial Day being this weekend, people need to take a second out. I mean, there are a lot of vets around. I mean, I know there are here, but they're all over the place. And, you know, like, there's this one guy that, like, lives in a house, and he's got his flag out, and he sits in his lawn chair and just watches the world go by, and he's got his hat on. And he said, he's kind of a Pearl Harbor era. I think he was in the Korean War, actually. As a matter of fact, he was in the Korean War. And, you know, he just likes to have people stop and talk to him. And so if everyone just take a minute to stop and talk to him, and he loves it. And he has little garage sales out there. It's real cute. It's so cute. And I just, you know, I don't want to buy anything from his garage sale because it's nothing I want. But, I mean, I'll just stop and talk to him. And the guy's really neat, and he just likes to talk. And let him talk, you know. I mean, I sat there for one day about 2 hours listening to him. He was talking about his ship, and he's in the Navy, and he was talking about what had happened on his ship. And I love listening to it because this is a guy who has provided me with the life I have right now. He was there giving his life, if it was necessary, to protect what makes this country what it is. And
it's so
people
true.
Seem to forget that.
You know, it's so true. You know, the part of the reason why liberal logic or liberal ideology goes so against the grain of rational thinking is it's just like some cell in your body having an issue with the immune system. I mean, sometimes the immune system doesn't perform as well as it should, or it might not perform as best. But you know what? If you have a great immune system, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? And it's like the military is America's immune system.
Yep.
It repels foreign invaders. It even sometimes, you know, knocks stuff out proactively. And right now, I think it's taking on something that's cancerous. that will metastasize, that will spread.
Well, what he has, I mean, I'm fully aware of how many cells there are in this country, being in San Diego, living two blocks away. I saw the September 11th bombers.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw them. I walked my dog past their house. I mean, they shopped at the same grocery store I did. They went to the same liquor store I did. And by the way, they drank liquor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a no-no. I didn't see them buy any Slim Jims with the pork, but...
Well, they'll eat that. Believe me, they'll eat that, too, if they're hungry enough.
Did you guys see that big hog that got wrestled down today by that 11-year-old or whatever?
No.
Yeah, some uber hog, like 1,100 pound hog that got shot by some 11-year-old kid. I'm like, yeah, send that over to Iraq. See if you share it.
Was that down in Florida?
I can't remember where it was.
If so, wrestling might have been around there.
I think it might have been Virginia, actually.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you're mentioning sending the hog over to Iraq. Kind of, you know, makes me think of, like, what did they do? They used to, like, threaten to, like, shoot Muslims with, like, bullets dipped in pig blood or something like that way back when Patton was around or something like that.
Yep.
But then lately, I understand stuff like that kind of warfare. The irony is, like, this letter from General Petraeus that came out not too long ago, and he was talking about how we can't stoop to the level of the terrorists. Like,
I can.
Well, he was saying that we need to be really careful because winning an insurgency is winning the hearts and minds of the people who live in the area. And he's saying, you know, one wrong, false move could turn a whole area against us. And
yeah, but you have to understand is that our existence is a false move.
What's that?
Our existence is a false move to the ones that matter. The ones that don't care about our existence are not the ones that matter. Our existence is, quote, infidels or the West or America or Jews or Zionists or whatever the name is today. Our existence is enough to wreak havoc. I mean, they're teaching kids starting at, you know, from the womb to, hey, I mean, Farfur, that Mickey Mouse they have over in Palestine.
Well, hold on. I don't know if that's true about, I'm talking about, like, right in Iraq. I don't know if that's true about every Iraqi.
No,
I mean,
it's not true about every Iraqi. It's like it's not true about every Muslim. I know Muslims here in America that are not terrorists. They're not going to blow me up. They don't want to blow me up.
No, I meant you to say most of them don't.
Not most of them. Well, 1 in 4 Muslim youths apparently do. Or apparently
called up the Jay Severin show and had a little discussion, argument with him about that. Because you know something? Again, leaning right, my temptation is to say, holy cow, did you hear that figure? But, you know, I also asked, How many non-Muslim kids in America, you know, would say the same thing about the enemy? Like, I think it's okay to use suicide bombing in certain situations. You know, I can understand because I've played, like, you know, strategy games and stuff with people over the years. I can understand people who they will say something because logically and rationally they can see the case for it. That doesn't mean that they are excited about it or inspired by it or would do it themselves. And I also mentioned to him that the conditions for that don't exist here, and I don't think they could exist here anytime soon because of what you just said, where Muslim children in, like, Palestine, for instance, are raised immediately from birth to hate people. And they also are in conditions where they have almost very little hope left, and strapping on a suicide bomb to them is the one chance they have to do something fine for their family. And they think they're going to go to heaven and get, you know, or to wherever they go, get praised for it, become martyrs.
And
I don't think that doesn't exist here in the States. So I think
one in four
are just saying it kind of on a rational sense. And I think that a lot of non-Muslim people would say, you know what, if my back was against the wall and my existence was being attacked, or I believed it was, I would do whatever the hell I had to.
No, I agree with you, but it's the same thing as Mexico, for example. Mexico has no excuse for being a third world country.
They have oil reserves, too, don't they? They have oil reserves.
They not only have oil reserves, they have the biggest tourist destinations in the world.
Right.
And the Middle East has, obviously, the biggest oil reserves in the world. There is no excuse for it being a 20th world country. There's no excuse. None. There's zero excuse for why the country is run the way it is, other than the fact that it's run by mullahs and dictators and people that want to keep the little guy down, which is the same situation in Mexico.
Well, quick question. Saudi Arabia, I know the complexities over there, but Saudi Arabia, they don't live in the same poverty as the other Arab nations. I know they're intertwined with us, and that probably has something to do with it, but Is it the same over there? Do they live in squalor and and that kind of stuff in the middle of the?
They have their share of poverty. Yes.
They've got their areas that do, but they've also got quite a few areas that are just like immense. They're beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Kuwait is like that too, right? I mean, there's not much poverty in Kuwait.
Kuwait's the same way. Egypt, which is an area that we're not really fighting in, it's the same way. It's got poverty-stricken areas. It's got great, grandiose things as well.
We got the same shit
here in America, though, too.
And what I'm saying is it just seems like any oil-rich country that America's involved with, like it's really intertwined with, has a lot better inner city infrastructure than the cities the countries that aren't involved with America. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
Well, and it's hard to look at that in the sense that, like, Saudi Arabia probably should be, like, number one on the axis of evil. I mean, how many of the 9/11 bombers were actually from Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, they have a complex situation over there. I mean, you know, the country's run by the imams, really, you know?
Well, in Pakistan, for example, I mean, they're, quote, an ally, but... Where's Osama bin Laden right now? Probably in Pakistan.
Yeah.
So,
well, what does that tell you, though? This thing is a lot more complex than just, you know, killing an enemy.
So it's not going to be, and that's the thing. That right there, what you just said, it's not going to be something you can solve in a microwave. It's not going to be people start talking about it, and they say it's the long war. It is the long war. This isn't something we can solve overnight. We can't, you know, turn it into glass. We're not going to nuke them. You can't do that. You can't, you know, this is an insidious thing. You go to England. My husband's from England. He's an immigrant, a legal immigrant from England. You look at what's happening in there. The mullahs and whatever they call them over there are preaching hatred over there. They're doing it here in America.
They're at least deporting them now.
They're doing it in South Korea as well, where they're at.
They're doing it in South Korea. They're doing it over in Japan. They're doing it in China. They're doing it you look in Indonesia. They're killing Buddhists all over the place, Taiwan. You look all over the country. You look all over the world, and it's everywhere. And in Canada, for example, Canada, everyone forgets about Canada. It's happening up there. And it's something we really need to watch out for. I mean, I'm not a Christian. Like I said, I was an atheist, and you were talking about being Christian and everything earlier, but... They're doing things like making special washrooms in airports for Muslims. Are you putting special rooms for Christians in to pray? And you gotta start looking at that kind of
thing. That isn't what I would call assimilation, is it? Assimilation?
Yeah, there's no assimilation there. They don't assimilate. It's kind of scary. I mean, the Walmart, and I do shop at Walmart, I'm bad, but the toilet paper's cheaper there. But there's a Muslim woman that works. There's several Muslim women that work there, but there's one that wears the full burqa with the eye slit burqa. You know, the one where only her eyes show.
Yeah.
Is she crazy?
Blue one.
Huh?
Is it colored blue?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. The blue burqa, and she's got nothing but the little eyes showing, and she creeps the fuck out of everybody in there. And it's like, Jesus, that's not American.
I'm going to go in wearing a burqa.
Women don't... Dude, get your tits out, you know? I mean, wear those Daisy Dukes and have fun and be free. And you're looking at this woman, and she creeps me out. I mean, every time I go in there, and she's always in the garden section, which kills me because that's my favorite section.
How do they know she doesn't, like, take stuff out with her at the end of the night?
Oh, I know. She's probably shoving stuff up there left and right, but no, I'm just kidding.
No.
But she's probably, you know, probably a nice person, but Jesus Christ, who knows? I don't even know what the hell she looks like. She's got brown eyes. That's all I know. You can't see her face. You can't dialogue with her. That's not assimilation. That's not American. Being an American is being a person that's free, and that's not freedom. That's a shackle to me.
Well, once again, my friend who is from Lebanon, he was telling me himself, he says, look, I want to live in a country where we're free to practice whatever religion we want. You know what I mean? He says, I don't want, you know, and he loves it living here that much. But he says, when I first came here, 26 years ago, he says, I would stop and I would pray right in the street. And back then, people would look at me and they would respect me. They would say, wow, he's so devoted. Look at how much devotion he has to his religion and so on. He says, now, like, they report me. You know, they want to report me if I get down and pray in the middle of the street. But he understands the complexities of the situation as well.
You kind of look at that. I mean, a place I was living, actually, the one I was still living two blocks from where the other September 11th, where the September 11th bombers lived, there was an apartment that came up for rent, and four Middle East, and it's a two-bedroom place, and four Middle Eastern guys rented it. And, you know, and I'm not one of those people that's psycho-paranoid. I don't look at every Middle Eastern-looking person and go, oh, he's a terrorist. I don't do that at all. But these guys... I'd walk the dog by, and you could look up there, and they had the windows barely open. They had, like, eight computers in there, no furniture, and they lived there for, like, 5 months and with no furniture, just a bunch of computers. They'd be on the computer all night. They were doing – it was fishy. So, you know, I called the FBI. You know what I mean? That was fishy to me. I'm looking at this, and I'm going, these guys don't go out. They don't socialize. I mean, this place is, you know, it's San Diego. Everybody talks to everybody. You know, everybody's everybody's friend. You know, these guys wouldn't talk to you. They wouldn't look at you. And all they did was sit in front of all these they had computers lining their living room, which they were kind of stupid because they opened their blinds. You could see right in. But, you know, they had one dirty sofa and I think a bed in the one front bedroom that you could see and nothing but computers. And so, you know what? I called the FBI on it. And you know what? About 3 weeks later, they were gone. So I don't know what that was.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it was them and this was the case, but I've had money stolen out of my eGold account from Pakistan. So I'm not going to say... that it was. This is what they were up to, but there's a lot of scams that go on. People
sure, it wasn't Nigeria.
No, I know the Nigerian scams. So.
Those Nigerians, man. Last thing I heard, they were selling dogs on Craigslist. They were trying to like pretend to sell dogs and
get they're doing all kinds of stuff now.
Dogs over and
hey, Fekid. Oh, quick, hey, Fekid.
Yeah.
What's going on there, buddy?
Not much.
Yeah.
Just
we leaving you out? Anything you want to add?
No, I'm just listening in.
Okay, because the show's going to come to an end shortly. We've already kind of gone over into the, you call it into the archives. I just say that we've gone off the air live.
Into the abyss.
Into the abyss. So I noticed, is it Jen or Jenna? Or both?
Jen. Yep.
I noticed you had Alice Shrugs on your show.
A couple times, yeah.
Yeah, but she is, she seems kind of like, I know she's a great warrior for the cause. She has a very far out sense of humor, I would say. Like, very sarcastic towards the liberal crowd.
Pam is she's a card, that one. Actually the first time we had her on the show, I mean, obviously you can see how much I can talk.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that because I watched some of her. She made some videos too, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I get like. You know, I am tied into her news feed, so I end up getting, like, eight things a day. You know what I'm saying? Like, eight notices a day. There's a new article of some kind. So
Pam's a fighter, and she's, you know, I love her. She's great, you know, but she definitely, she's got her opinions, man. You can't fight against it.
Yeah.
To shut me up, obviously, as you can clearly tell since I've just hijacked your show.
No, you didn't really. You know what it is? I'm actually...
I feel bad. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't hijack the show. In fact, Fat Kid knows I can wrestle back the mic anytime I want. I have no problem. I'm telling you, if you listen to some of my shows, you would be horrified at some of the stuff I've said and done to people.
Do you know that he is also, on of his own accord, left the show and left someone else in charge?
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet, but I might.
I know, I'm just in the middle of it. I've just left the show, left somebody else in charge of it.
Actually, you know what? One time, because I have a co-host, so like one time he had a writer on, Randy Wayne Wright. I think he writes these kind of spy novels or whatever. And I hadn't actually read his book or anything like that. And he started talking about Cuba, and he goes, you know, things have improved since Castro has been out of there. And he actually said, things have improved. And he started talking about the good things that are happening. And he said, there's internet cafes and da, da, da. And I said, well, that's good news. I mean, things are getting better in Cuba. And the guy turned around and went, Jen, and yelled at me, like screamed at me. He's like, things are not better in Cuba. And started screaming at me. And I went, okay, and just shut up. I'm like, I'm not going to talk to this guy. You know, I mean, he just told me everything was, like, kind of improving. And so I was just kind of agreeing with him. Like, that sounds good. Things seem to be improving.
Yeah.
And when I agreed with him, he started screaming at me, like, you know what? I don't even want to talk to this guy. And I'm IMing my co-host. I'm going, can we just click this guy off already? I mean, can we get rid of him? But
well, sometimes, though, I play devil's advocate, but not in a way that's even overtly obvious. Like, I really kind of, like, I want to say, like, Jeremy Paxman a little bit. You ever listen to that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, this show has kind of been I've not done any of that during the show because you're a sincere person. You come on here, you had a lot to say. You've got your own show. You're trying to get the word out. You want to have a real conversation.
No, I don't care about getting the word out on the show.
Well, but you want to have a real conversation, so I keep it real. I mean, I don't. Some of the shows I've listened to on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm sure there's other ones around the world, but some of them are silly almost for the sake of being silly, or they're silly to cover up having nothing else to say. But
yeah.
I've had people write to me, and this is not, I'm not bragging, but because I always tell people if it's true, it's not bragging, you know. But I've had people write to me and say, you know what? It looks sometimes like you're being silly or provocative, but people, if they really listen, will always come away having learned something really, really deep about, you know, about people
something.
In life. In fact, I've had a sociopath on the show. Do you remember Rusty, Chat Kid?
Oh, yeah.
Remember those shows? Those were some pretty awesome shows.
Those were, you know, not to cut you short with everything that's going on now, but those were actually probably some of your best because, I mean, they were just hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of got, to tell you the truth, I can't say I got a little bit bored, but Jen, you heard the beginning of the show. I was really beginning the show by telling people why I was probably not going to be doing much more Blog Talk Radio. And it had to do with, you know, I got my humble beginnings on MySpace. And when you start, it's kind of cool. It's fresh. It's new. You start, you know, meeting new people and you're making things happen out of nothing. But after a while, you start to see patterns in people's existence. And it's not like, you know, people aren't, they're not, I can't say diehard loyalists, but there's all kinds of, like, psychosis in people. Even people who agree with you on a lot of issues can, like, turn around and stab you in the back over something stupid.
That's one of the things that kind of hurt sometimes. Like, you have a regular, you know. I've got a lot of regulars on my blog. And I've got, like, two, for example. I've got one that's, she's an American that lives in England, and obviously my husband's from England, and, you know, she's a friend of mine, and I've known her for several, you know, 5 years, and I have a guy that's kind of been coming on my blog for about 6 months, and he's funny, and, you know, he's hardcore, but he's hardcore, and she happens to be a lesbian, and so he picked up on that, and he started nailing her on that, and they started fighting, and he actually went on her blog and basically shut her blog down, like spamming it. And
yeah, it gets petty. It gets pretty petty.
It was really horrible. And it's like, you know, I mean, I really like this guy. I mean, he's a friend of mine. I have fun. I like his comments. They're funny.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really funny. But I love Chris. She's my friend. And, oh, I'm using names. But, you know, and now everyone will know what I'm talking about if they listen to this. But hopefully they don't find me. But, you know, they're fighting, and it breaks my heart. It's like, first of all, you're both on the same side. Which is what kills me.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this other side come out of people, and I'm trying to email the one guy, and I'm saying, look, can you just back off her? You know, I mean, if you guys want to fight, have it out, and that's fine, because my blog tends to be a message board sometimes almost more than the comments.
It's what?
I mean, the comments almost become like a message board.
Yeah.
I mean, the How to Scan comments go from, like, being comments on what I post to being, like, a message board back and forth to everybody, and which is fine. That's what the jungle's all about. I want people to be able to say what they want to say and do what they want to do and have fun. Libtards, too. I mean, I've only banned one ever. I've only ever banned one
mm-hmm.
Moonbat ever from my blog. I let them comment and let them say what they want to say and you know, I'm very free on that, but this fight between the two of them is still going on right now. It's killing me, you know. I mean, I just...
So why do you... Now, I can understand the obvious position, but why do you do your shows? Why do you blog? I mean, what do you really get out of it?
God, a headache?
I mean, is it... Well, let me ask you this. Could you walk away from it tomorrow?
You know, I couldn't. And the only reason... Sometimes I really think, and I know where you're getting at with this.
You do, huh?
Well, sometimes I really think I can because there's times where I'm so frustrated and I'm beating my head against a wall and I'm so mad about things that are going on and I just want to go, oh, God, I'm done with it.
Well, have you at all figured, like, do you know if any verifiable, measurable way that you feel you've made a difference, or are you just kind of,
yes.
is it become your form just to get it off your chest?
No, and even, I even get liberals that will, like, come on my blog, or, well, they won't come on my blog, they'll email me on the side and say, hey, you know, you really made sense in what you're saying, you know, I've got to rethink what I'm thinking about this subject.
Mm-hmm.
Or, for example, I had... last week, I mean, I was telling you about the Blue Star Moms we had on. We had a woman from Canada call in, and she said, you know, up in here in Canada, I mean, people seem to forget the fact that there are Canadian forces over in Iraq right now. And she said, you know, I think it was 6 Canadians were killed a couple weeks ago. And she said, you know, I don't feel that there's any support up here. I mean, the anti-American sentiment is, like, rampant up there. It's just libtard hell.
Yeah, well.
And it's gnarly.
They still owe half their existence to us, so.
Yeah, no shit. But she's like, you know, there's no sentiment up there. She called the show, she's new, and she had just started coming to the blog, and she sent me an email afterwards, and she said, you know, I was crying, you know, when I got off the phone, because you were the first person that offered me any chance of some kind of way I could give back to my soldiers that were up here. And so what I did for her is I called the Canadian Department of Defense and asked them, as a Canadian citizen, what would you do to do something to support, you know, the troops? And, the Department of Defense up in Canada, he got back to me in less than 12 hours.
Yep.
And was giving me, you know, 15 different websites and places she could go, and I gave them to her, and, you know, she gave me her number, and I called her up there in Canada, and she was crying, and she's like, thank you so much for what I did. And so that kind of thing. That's the kind of thing that keeps me in it. When I get people that, you know, instant message me after the show and say, wow, you know, that was just, you know, I was crying, or that just really made me want to go out and do this, or this made me really feel this way about something, that's what keeps me in. Unfortunately, it's not often enough that that happens, but that's the only thing that's keeping me in at this point. I mean, there's times where I do want to say fuck it and go away.
Gotcha. Have you ever read or listened to Michael Yon?
Yeah.
What do you think of him?
I probably don't listen to him enough to probably form an opinion. I'm one of those people that doesn't listen to anyone enough. You actually mentioned Savage. You're a Savage fan?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I thought that was kind of odd for someone that calls themselves, like, middle of the road, because he's, like, extreme right-wing.
Middle of the road doesn't mean that you can't appreciate something that a right-winger says. It just means that you cherry-pick, like, the best from everybody.
I know, but, I mean, he's, like, extreme right-wing.
Oh, but, you know, the thing is, though, is he says what needs to be said with the force that needs to be said with, and I'm not saying he says that. See, if you look at the way life works, and I'm not going to give a treatise on that, even if think I'm capable of it, but the way life really works is that you have some people who are like prophets, okay? And they run around and they scream to the preaching of the choir. They scream to the people that will listen to them. Amongst those people are like a bunch of people who are just simply followers, and they'll just say, oh, yes, yes, and I agree, and they'll go back, and they'll repeat whatever was said to them to the people that are around them.
The lemmings, yeah.
But amongst them, there are people who are truly scholarly, and they really listen, and they try and mine the nuggets of wisdom or the pieces of information they think are useful and helpful, and they might take it from a right-winger, they might take it from a left-winger, they might take it from a libertarian, they might take it from somebody who's an independent, and they come back and they form a synthesis. I mean, they synthesize something out of it that is kind of new and fresh and invigorating, I think, that's a little bit more enlightened than any one of those people separately. But it takes a special kind of person to do that, and I won't say that I am that kind of person, but, you know, I just go about my business.
I listen to Savage every once in a while. I don't listen to him all the time. I mean, I don't dislike him.
I think he says what needs to be said. I mean,
no, I've listened to his show and sat there nodding my head.
He considers himself to be like Paul Revere. I mean, you know, he has the Paul Revere Society, right? Or he's a part of it anyways.
Well, he is a Paul Revere. He does shout it from the rooftop.
Yeah.
He shouts it from the horseback and, you know, the Muzzies are coming, the Muzzies.
But what does it tell you, though, that I think he has over 10 million listeners?
Yeah.
What does it tell
like
you?
That.
What does it tell you that 10 million people tune into his show?
Well, you know, and that's another interesting fact. We could talk for 5 hours, I think, you and I, but, you know, you look at it and you go, well, all the polls are coming out, and everybody hates the war, and everybody hates Bush, and everyone's going to the left. And I've got one real special little libtard that comes on my site saying, oh, you're one of the irrelevant, you know, 28% left of the country. And I go, why is it the Bill O'Reilly show is number one?
Yeah.
Why is it the Fox is the number one watched news station? And don't tell me it's because you're just watching the enemy. You know, why is it that, you know, everybody loves Sean Hannity? Why is it? Because he's a common sense thinker. I mean, I don't always agree with Hannity. I don't always agree with Bill.
Well, I'll tell you something fascinating about them. When you have, I've always referred to like left versus right, not as on equal footing. I've referred to it as Cain versus Abel, or mature versus immature, or I guess that's probably the better way of putting it. But you know, you get guys like Hannity, you get guys like Bill, who even if they kind of have their Christian right leanings, they take what the opposition says and they break it down in a way that they say, here's what they're saying, here's what they're saying. And they compare and they contrast and they have the opposite viewpoint on. So even if a person on the left, a diehard liberal, can't stand those guys, can't stand what they're talking about, they will tune in because they want to see if, first of all, if the left is being adequately represented. But in doing so, they actually start to pick up osmotically on some of the topics that are being talked about from the point of view of O'Reilly, or from the, you know, from a different perspective. You can't just go to monitor like a strip club, you know, for like 10 years and not suddenly get roped into trying something that you normally wouldn't try in one of those places.
Hoorah!
So that's what I'm just using that as an extreme example. So you get people who they may say they're tuning in just to kind of like, you know, monitor what's going on, but eventually stuff's going to sink in. And I hear people on the Savage Show, Ian on O'Reilly, quite often saying, you know, I used to be a liberal. I used to be a liberal, but I listened long enough. I gave you a chance. I heard what you're saying. I don't agree with everything you say. I don't even agree sometimes necessarily with even most of what you say, but you make a really good argument and you give me stuff to think about. But when you have guys like Al Franken and Jay Diamond on the left, I mean, I've listened to their shows and it sounds like a bunch of school kids getting together and sarcastically just sounding anti-authoritarian with each other. And nobody, you can only get so much of that. Like
trying real hard and not succeeding.
I mean, it just turns you sour listening to that stuff. It's like, man, look at George Bush again. You know, it's like, you know.
Hitler, Chimpy McHitler Burton, you know, Mia. It's.
I know. Well, you know, the funny thing is, like, now one of the big funny things on the political blogs is anytime somebody brings up something that, like, has nothing to do with George Bush, people just jokingly say, oh, yeah, George Bush's fault.
Well, it's true. I mean, it's something I've said for a while. Like, George Bush could seriously come out tomorrow with a cure for AIDS and cancer and global warming or whatever else you want to add to the list. He could be like, okay, you do this, it'll solve that problem 100%. They would... It wouldn't happen. They would shoot him. I don't know whatever they're going to do to him. It wouldn't happen. I mean, the guy could come out with anything, and it doesn't matter. So in that sense, he's a lame duck. He can't do anything.
Well, they'd find some janitor in the White House that, you know, wasn't like given like a $1,000 bonus or something, and they'd say, oh, see, guy cures AIDS, but, you know, he really doesn't care about the little people. He did it for the corporations.
Yeah, it's all about oil. Halliburton.
Yeah. I know, but you know what's funny? What we're doing now is kind of what they do on the liberal shows, though. That's what I was kind of talking about before, but we mix it up. That's the difference.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, and the reason why I actually want to do my own show on the side of My Point Radio is that we're really fair. Like, we've asked, like, we had a Muslim student that goes to Yale. We had her on talking about Islam and stuff. Like, we're like, let everyone have a chance. I want a show where I can just rant my ass off and be a bitch. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, which is your show tonight. But, no, well, thank you so much for having me on for, like, way over your show and everything. And it was fun. Unfortunately, I've just started really actually listening to other shows on Blog Talk Radio. I've been really guilty of just listening to ours and a couple of close friends and not really branching out. And I've been trying to do that. And I've picked up some really good shows that are on, and yours is one of them.
Well, I'm glad you showed up, too. You know, I never know what to expect each week because, like I said, I was getting a little bit just kind of tired of the MySpace scene and the Blog Talk Radio scene in general. So I didn't even blast out bulletins to people to come listen to my show anymore. I would just do them and then I post them on my blog. I still get a lot of hits on them that way. But you know, tonight I threw out a bulletin, and that's why Fat Kid noticed it and he came on down. But for the most part, I was just sort of like the beginning of that you were listening to was like my leading into like, so, you know, it doesn't seem like there's anything really kind of left anymore. There's plenty of political shows. I don't need to do more politics. There's plenty of, you know, shows where people get on, act silly and zany and make fun of people. I've had former strippers on the show. I told you I've had a sociopath on the show. I've had, gosh, who knows what else on the
probably
show.
We've probably had plenty of sociopaths on the
yeah.
show.
Yeah, but at least this one knew he was diagnosed as such, and I had people call up and ask him questions, you know.
Sweet.
Yeah, you call into the show, and now you can ask a sociopath what they really think about things without worrying about getting your head smashed in with a hammer, you know.
Yeah, well, it's actually one of my good friends. Have you heard of Doc Blogstein?
No. Oh, yeah. No, I haven't.
Doc Blogstein has a show on, I'm pimping his show now. He's got a show on Blog Talk Radio, and he gets the most random-ass people on. I think last week he had a video gamer who's the champion video gamer in the country on. He gets, like, chicks with dicks and, like, you name it on there. I mean, just the most random people. So there's a lot out there on Blog Talk Radio, and I think, you know, I mean, I know myself and my co-host, we kind of complain about Blog Talk Radio a lot.
I took a shit on the show on one of my first few shows, and the owner actually called in.
Alan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He apologized because stuff did come down, but I jokingly, I'm like, yeah, Blog Talk Radio is probably fucking up again tonight, you know.
Well, and they do fuck up. I mean, we had one show where, like, literally our guests or our listeners couldn't hear us. So I'm getting, like, all these IMs, like, people saying with IMs going, like, you're not on the air.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're still talking to the guest, and because we were streaming, like, they were recording it, but they couldn't actually hear us. And so we had, like, the Blog Talk Radio people on, and Alan's called the show. And actually, Alan's an interesting guy. He really is. He, have you heard of Heading Right? That's another one you might want to check out.
No, no.
Heading Right is the new, well, it's the right wing, obviously, Heading Right.
Oh, yes, yes, okay, I did.
Blog with, you know, Ed Morrissey and all them.
Yeah.
So we live blogged the last debate, and then we had a little round table afterwards. So, and I think they're going to start doing that now, more regular round tables with a bunch of different people like Kit Gerald from Euphoric Reality and some of us are going to be on there and just kind of chatting and give it a call. You know, you're definitely middle of the road. I mean, I think you're probably a Republican. You're like me, that you're actually probably more Republican than independent. You're probably just a little disillusioned with what's been going on. And I don't want to talk for you and tell you what you are, but
no, that's okay. I mean, that's your impression, you know.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting. I think you're probably more right leaning, but
that's why. But that's why I say that I'm independent who leans right, because if I was Republican, I would probably even know what Republican values were, and I really don't. I mean, like, I can tell. I can tell by the taste what they are, but I really don't personally care to get involved in a party because I believe that...
Well, independent's a party, isn't it?
Well, but when I say... when I say independent, I mean, like, I'm an independent thinker. But
yeah.
I guess that would place me in the independent party.
Well, we like to call ourselves common sense thinkers. We like think common sense, like the border needs to be closed for a little while. You know, I mean, we just have like a lot of millions of people in this country illegally, and I don't think we can afford to have them all here. So maybe we should close the border a little bit. You know, that kind of thing. You know, it kind of makes sense. So you know, it's just being a common sense thinker. So. Anyway, I've rambled on long enough, haven't I?
No, that's quite okay. Once again, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I think that, you know, sometimes, I'm not saying this once again to brag, but if you ever do go back to my archives, and maybe, you know, if you're open to it, I'll send you a couple of links to some of I think are the better shows. But if you ever go through them, and obviously since you're in radio and since you do talk and you do listen to conversations, you're probably somebody whom I wouldn't feel would be like, you know, like some people may not want to listen to a one-hour, two-hour show, but you might do it in the background as you're, like, surfing or doing something else. But
yeah.
I tell people, if you really do go through my shows, there's some, like, fascinating stuff in there about human nature that is not – I don't even talk about it directly. I do it. I push people in certain ways. I tweak them. I bring up topics. I had one show that was about big, fat lesbians, and it was literally – I probably said the word – do you remember that show, Fat Kid? I talked about big – I just mentioned the phrase big, fat lesbian. Huh?
Yeah, I think I tuned in for a little bit, but then I had something come up and I had to go somewhere.
I talked about big fat lesbians, and I mentioned that Well, I mentioned, I probably just said the phrase big fat lesbians probably like 100 times, but I said it like in an objective sounding way that nobody could really like give me a hard time over it, but it was obvious that I was really pushing the edge.
Are you implying there's anything wrong with big fat lesbians?
No, in fact, one of the things is I said that, you know, when you really think about how many homosexual people there are in the country, or whatever the statistics are these days, and what it takes, like monarch butterflies, you know, like finding each other out in the middle of like all that spacious air and wilderness. I said, when I see two big fat lesbians together, I want to run up and like congratulate them, you know, and give them like a big hug and say how happy I am that they found each other. I said, but it's kind of like a person who's overweight, and I'm not making fun of overweight people, but it's like sometimes you want to go up and say something, oh, how many months until, you know, your baby's born? And it's like you get that awkward look and like, I'm not pregnant. Well, imagine going up to two big fat lesbians and just being happy for them and congratulating them on their success and on their love and wishing them the best and finding out that they're just like sisters or mother and daughter or something like that, you know. So I really have to restrain my joy when I see people I think are big fat lesbians.
It kills me because one of my best friend's a big fat lesbian.
Yeah, they're really everywhere.
And her girlfriend's like the skinny bean pole, though, so she's not too big fat.
There's more than you know. I mean, I think, for instance, you know, like statistics of Jewish people, I think 2% of America is Jews, and yet you see them all over the place. You see them in the news,
oh.
You see them everywhere. And I think the same with big fat lesbians. They're starting to come out of the woodwork more and more, you know?
It's Tijuana. I mean, I live in a specific part of San Diego. Google it. I'm falling rosy on you now if we're talking about big fat lesbians. But Google it. La Jolla, California.
Oh, yeah. La Jolla.
Yeah, La Jolla. We have, and I live in the ghetto of La Jolla, believe me, right on the 5, but I am on the west side of the 5. We got a Jewish center down the road, and I swear to God, every other person here is Jewish. But it's like, you know what, all my life, for some reason, I've always gravitated towards Jews. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's the Scottish in me, and I'm cheap, but I don't know.
Maybe that's why you came on my show tonight.
Are you Jewish, too?
Yeah.
There you go. I always have. See, that's psychotic. My best friends all through my life, every single best friend I've ever had, like my closest friends always, since kindergarten, have always been Jewish. I mean, I've probably gone to more like Passovers and Seder dinners and just, you know, Rosh Hashanah than any other holiday I've ever celebrated. So,
well, you know what it is? We come from a culture of people who, we come from a race of people who have been just kicked from every country to every country and scapegoated like at every possible turn.
Oh, yeah,
so now that we're like kind of in the lap of luxury or that we're living in better times, we're like, what are you going to be so upset for? You know, we have like little things like that because nothing compares to what, you know, our ancestors went through.
Well, what kills me about the Jews, you look at Jews, and it's like, you look at Israel. They went, and they were, like, plopped down in the middle of a desert, and
yeah.
They made a first-world country out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they made a first-world, they're the only first-world country over there, really. They really are. They're the only country over there that has democracy. They're, you know, women aren't beaten in the streets. I mean, they, you know, people aren't, you know, women are wearing normal clothes. They go to school. They're educated. They're in positions of power. You know, you look at them. I mean, I've never met a people like the Jews. I mean, it absolutely kills me that they're so reviled across the world. It absolutely kills me. I mean, probably I'm biased.
No, once again, they're not reviled. The media just portrays them as reviled. There's actually a lot of people who respect them.
Really,
and there's actually a lot of Muslims and a lot of Arabs who respect them too and actually want to live in Israel. But if they say so and where they live, they'll get their heads cut off.
Yeah, shot. Yeah, you're dead. But, you know, I swear, I look at the Jewish people and I just say, you know, hats off to you, man. I mean, I'm Scottish. I mean, my background's Scottish, so we were bitch slapped by the English for a long time. But
sure.
You know, I married an Englishman, so the irony there. But, you know, I look at the Jewish people, and I just, God, that is a people right there that I just absolutely think are amazing beyond words. I mean, after the Holocaust, which I will not be a denier of because it happened, you know, I can't even imagine coming back from that. And they have, and they bounced back hugely. And I think that everyone's just jealous over there. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. I mean, they've gone, well, these people are shoved into the desert, into this crappy splot of land, and they have made a first world country out of it.
I know. And you know, and it's funny, they don't really blame, because they don't blame anyone else for their troubles. They know. They know that it's up to them. And if they, you know what I'm saying? They know that it's up to them to get it done. And, you know, one of the things that detractors will always say is that, yeah, well, if it wasn't for the United States, then they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't exist. And you know what the funny thing is? is like, well, so what are you saying? I mean, they were obviously, they are attractive to the United States, so that's why the United States helps support them, because they share the same values, and they also know how to take a lump of clay and make, you know, quite a luscious country out of it.
Well, when was the last time Israel, like, had suicide bombers go kill a bunch of Americans or any other group?
Yeah, they really do restrain them. They restrain themselves until they finally have to go to war, and then they just, you know, then they know they're in it for their survival.
I was arguing about that today with one of my coworkers. I mean, I'm the politics girl. They all come to me. So they all know I've got a show, and they know I have blogs, so they all come to me and ask me. So this guy comes and asks me, and he's like, why is Israel lobbing bombs over there? And I went, well, they had 80 rockets slammed in there, and then finally a woman was killed, and they got sick of it, so they lobbed a few back. I mean, can you blame them?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in San Diego right now. If Mexico started lobbing bombs into San Ysidro, mm-hmm. Do you think that we would just, like, seriously sit here and do nothing?
No.
And, you know, and to point, I think we would. We'd probably be like, okay, could you
stop doing that? You're right,
actually, these
days. Huh? I said you're right, actually. These days we might not do anything.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, like, at a point we'd be like, it's like Israel. It's like, okay, could you please stop throwing those bombs over here? Okay, really, no, I mean it. Please stop throwing those bombs over here. Okay, you know what? You're starting to piss me off. Stop throwing the bombs.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. We're going to lob a few back over to you.
And you know the funny thing is I did read another news story in the Globe one time that talked about a Lebanese woman who found an unexploded Israeli artillery shell in her bathroom. And they asked her if she was mad at the Israelis, and she said, no, I heard Hezbollah in my garden last night. They were firing rockets out of my yard. She says, I don't blame
you. Think?
I don't blame Israel. That was a good shot.
Well, it was like the offensive last summer after the guys were kidnapped and Israel and Lebanon were going back and forth. And you go, Israel was lobbing bombs in the neighborhoods, right? Well, that's where they had their rockets set up and were lobbing bombs at them. What are they going to do? I mean, like that one building, it turned out like they said, oh, you know, like 40 people were killed, innocent civilians in a hospital that were bombed by Israel. And it turned out, well, actually, they got all the people out of it, and the building didn't fall for like 8 hours or something later. And, you know, and it wasn't, and it had the insurgents or terrorists or whatever the hell you want to call them in it. And it's just like, yeah, I feel so bad for Israel. I mean, I just want to go down there and just hug all the people.
I know.
They're like, you know, they're like our brothers and sisters down there. They really are. Like, seriously, if any, besides Australia, of any country on this planet that we have support from is Israel. I mean, and my husband's pointing at himself right now, going, England, England.
I know. Isn't it funny how people try and drive a wedge between it when they talk about the attack of the Liberty? Remember that? The U.S. Liberty?
It's true. Well, you know what's funny about that is his father-in-law came over last summer for the first time. He'd never been out of England in his life. And he came over to America, and he did not want to come. Or not his father-in-law, his stepfather. And his stepfather came over, and he'd never been to America before in his life. And it goes back to something I always say. It's like the Dynasty or the Dukes of Hazzard. Like, Europeans or people from other countries see America as one thing. They see this dynasty, like Hollywood and the rich and the powerful and the beaches and Baywatch or whatever and all that, or Dukes of Hazzard. You're living in a trailer and you're a redneck and you're driving the General Lee and, you know, whatever. They see it as one of the two. And he was so fascinating because when he came over here, he was really prejudiced against Americans. He didn't, you know, wasn't liking me, and he wasn't liking the whole America thing. And he smoked cigarettes like I do. Obviously, you can probably tell I've been smoking them the whole time I've been talking to you. But we're sitting outside smoking, and he's talking to me about politics. And he's like, you know, what do you think about George Bush and this war? And, you know, what do you think of all this? And I'm telling him. But he's like, they were here for 3 weeks. By the third day, I'm out on the porch smoking a cigarette with him, and he goes, maybe I'm wrong about some stuff. I'm like, you know, what stuff? And he's like going, well, you know, I didn't know. People have been real nice to me over here. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, and then another week goes by, and I guess they went to the mall, you know, and Americans love the Brits. They love the accent. I mean, so they were being fawned. My mother-in-law and him were being fawned all over. I mean, people were kissing their ass.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and he comes home, and he's like, people are so nice here. Like, everyone, like, this couple bought us lunch today. And I'm like, yeah, so, you know, it's typical. And he's like, well, that's not what I mean. That's, I mean, by the time the guy left, he was freaking bawling when we put him on the plane. He wanted to become a bus driver. Like, he loved our bus drivers here. He wanted to become a bus driver. Like, he's talking about, like, how we can help him immigrate here. I mean, the guy, but he went from, like, literally this one opinion from watching Sky News and BBC, which he's being fed, Sky News and BBC all day long, then came here and met Americans and was lived here for 3 weeks. Just 3 weeks. That's all it took. 3 weeks of living here in San Diego and just meeting the people and going down to the beach and going to the bars and hanging out, going to the restaurants. Like, even the wait people, he's like, man, England, they'll throw the plate on your table and spit at you. Mm-hmm. You know, here they kiss your ass. You know, I'm like, yeah, well, that's welcome to America, you know.
Well, I was telling you about my Lebanese friend. He went home. He came back just before the war broke out. And he said, I got off the plane and I kissed the ground. He went back home and he lived in a neighborhood where apparently it was that time of the month that Hezbollah has like a parade, and it's not a parade, like, you know, he hasn't been there in 26 years. So when he went back, he heard like a parade coming down like from far away, and he's like, "Oh, cool, Mom, I'm gonna go see the parade." And she says, "No, stay inside."
Yeah.
Apparently, when Hezbollah does a parade, it was for some like grandson of like some prophet who supposedly was killed and it died. I don't know. It was definitely death related.
Yeah, of course.
And he says they go to this. He was talking about this wonderful, beautiful mosque in town that was built, and it was just this beautiful multi-million-dollar mosque. And he said that they would crowd around it and they would chant and wail all night, every night for a month. And like in his city, people like go on vacation when that happens. They leave. They go to the other side of like the country.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, and so he says when I get back here, he says I kiss the ground. He says, in that country, if somebody wanted to, like, start a restaurant and employ people to be waiters and waitresses and stuff, they would get pushed out because Hezbollah goes in and pays, like, the locals, like, you know, $500 a month to say, here, hold this gun and stand around and be bodyguards.
Yeah, to not be productive, to not be...
Right, so they're basically killing the middle class, so they try to kill the middle class.
Or any class.
But that's why when he came back here, he says they don't stand a chance over there, you know? And,
I mean, it's funny because, like, the media feeds you this whole, like, you know, everybody hates America. And I have to admit, like I said, with my stepfather-in-law or whatever you want to call him, and we won't even get into my father-in-law. That's a whole other story.
Okay.
But, you know, my sister-in-law, like, she's coming out. She just came out for Christmas. She's coming out again in 3 weeks. She wants to move here. I mean, she's 24 years old. She's a kid. She, you know, she comes down here. She's all hot guys on the beach. You know, she can. It's beautiful here, and it's so free, and there's no, you know, street violence on the level of what they have there in London. They're from London, so London, obviously, with, you know, over 10 million people there, is pretty gnarly. But
yeah.
You know, I mean, she's like, I want to move here so bad. Like, can I stay at your place? And it's like, no, we have a townhouse. It's not that big. It's not for a 24-year-old kid. But, you know, it's funny how you see that. And my husband being British, he obviously attracts all the foreigners. So, for example, like, there's another guy that just moved here from London that lives in the same, like, housing area that we live in.
Yeah.
They've hooked up already. And, you know, he's like, oh, man, this place is great. I mean, this is so great here. You know, the Russians that we know, there's where he works, I mean, there's a couple Ukrainians and a couple Russian immigrants, all legal, a couple Irishmen. And it's like, why are you here? You know, if this country's so bad, why are you coming here? And they'll sit there for an hour and tell you why they'll take this country over any place else.
That's the one point that needs to be spoken to everybody who questions the U.S. If it's so bad, how come? I mean, the immigration numbers speak for themselves, you know, and that's the one thing people need to get across. Now, I'll tell you, you're one person I could probably go on with forever, but I do have to actually, like, head out and meet somebody.
I know.
So.
I actually was supposed to be somewhere like half an hour ago.
That's okay. We're at the 1-hour-52-minute mark, and... Yeah.
Well, you know what, thank you very much for having me on the length of time, and poor fat boy there just didn't get a word in edgewise.
No, he did for a little while. He doesn't mind. Sometimes he likes to just listen to the show in the background, and then when he hears something that, you know, means something to him, he chimes in.
Well, in fact, I mean, both of you are welcome to call in anytime to our show and, you know, give us a piece of your mind, and thank you so much for having me on for the length of time you did tonight. That was
sure, my pleasure. Do you have a MySpace blog you want to pimp out?
I don't. I only have my blog, which is www.screwliberals.com. That's it.
And you get a lot of liberal response to that blog, too.
Yeah, I've got my share moonbat.
Yeah.
And actually, some of them are resident moonbats, and they're almost fun. You just sit there, and you can just smack at them all day long. And I've got my regular. For some reason, is it just me, but it's kind of petering out recently.
What's that?
Like, I don't know, like, I used to get over 100 comments per post, that kind of thing. And lately I'm getting, like, 25 or 50 comments per post.
It has petered out. It's, you know, people get tired of talking about the same things after a while. And I'm not saying that you do that, but...
No, I do, believe me.
Huh?
Yeah, I do.
But that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like what else... It sort of happened also with my Fuck You Fridays series, which...
I love Fuck You Fridays.
Huh?
I love Fuck You Fridays.
Well, did you... Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I've heard of Fuck You Fridays or Friday Funnies or...
No, there might be other people who've kind of, you know, picked up on the idea and used the term, but, I mean, I really brought it to the extreme with, like, somebody just wrote me a Yahoo message saying that you go having radio shows again without me. It's my number one fanatic on MySpace, pretty much. I took the Fuck You Fridays. It started off originally as a place where I told people, look, if you want to complain about stuff on your own blog... You may not get a lot of people who come by and see it. And when you go to somebody else's blog and see their rant, you sort of have to comment on their rant. But I'll start a lead-off rant, and then you can rant about anything you want going on in your life. And, you know, in the very least, I'll let you just say it. If not, you know, I'll even support you. And some people have told me to fuck off. They've told Bush to fuck off. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Everybody just comes in and says fuck you to somebody.
And your blog is a MySpace blog?
Yeah, it's just www.myspace.com/Sam Freedom. Oh, I mean, I have other offline marketing blogs and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I've never gotten into MySpace. I mean, maybe I should. I mean, that's one thing that Dave is my co-host and I talk about and Blog Talk Radio talks about because they seem to be, like, really hip on the MySpace people. They seem to hate us. They don't like us. But
well, no, it's because Amy, who's the programming director, started,
I know Amy.
had a pretty, you know, decent following on MySpace, and she started there. And she also had the Blue Doodle for writers,
yeah.
And she cherry-picked people in. She's made great inroads as far as, like, you know, getting in touch with people at the Huffington Post and getting them to, you know, write her print her articles or to come talk on shows. And, you know, she's done quite a lot for the company.
Oh, so Amy's a libtard.
No.
Oh.
No, she's just a program director. She talks to whomever. She, you know, Blog Talk Radio is nonpartisan.
Okay.
Well, no, I really don't think that they... I don't see anything on the homepage.
They're a little partisan.
I don't see anything on the homepage. I don't see anything on the homepage that makes a person think that they cannot find either side of it.
No, that's true. No, and I'll give you that 100%. I'm not slamming Blog Talk Radio, believe me.
No, but you did think that she was a libtard, which is, like, I used to think so, too. And she says, why do you think that? And we had a little discussion about it. And, you know, she...
Well, you're talking about Huffington Post is, like, libtard-centric.
Yeah, so what? If I call up Michael Savage or just ask him about something or see if he wants to do a 5-minute interview, that doesn't mean I'm a right-winger.
I swear to God, though, it's funny. When I call, I'll call any show. Like, at this point, I'm, like, starting to call different shows just to, like, call in. Like, Digital Edge does the American Idol show.
Yeah.
Daryl. He calls our show all the time. He's a fan of My Point Radio, and we love him so much. He saved us a few times.
So were you going to say something about his show, or were you going to just talk about how you call into other shows?
I don't know, both. But no, but, you know, when we call in his show, and no, you just killed me right there. I have an actual point. We call his show. Nope, you killed my point. I've had too many beers tonight.
I killed your point.
Yeah, no, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. You know what it is, because we said we were going to hang up like 15 times,
I know,
just wanted to make sure that it went on point rather than into an anecdote or a story. I was trying to actually get the main point out.
It's okay. There's no main point. I'm done. You're done. I'm done.
How many beers did you have?
5.
Drinking on my show.
Friday night. I'm going to my parents' tomorrow to garden all day long.
No, that's quite okay. No, really, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I'll call in some other time. I hope you call my show.
Sure. I'm on pretty much Tuesdays and Friday nights at 10 o'clock, so you can usually find me here then. And yeah, I've already checked out your site. I like it. I like it. I'll get in touch with you over there, and I'll show you one of the better Fuck You Fridays.
Well, send me an email, jen@screwliberals.com, and thank you so much for having me on. It was good being on.
All right. Well, glad to have you. Thanks for coming.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, everybody, that about wraps up Sam Freedom Hour number 39. It's another two-hour show. We've had quite a few two-hour shows, and I know most of you folks out there, I don't want to insult you, but let's just say you have the attention span of a gerbil, and 2 hours is very long for you, especially when it's about politics. It's one of the things that I didn't do. I'm glad I got the beginning of my show up, because I'll gladly talk politics with people, but I know that politics puts a lot of my blog readers to sleep, especially when it's the stuff you kind of hear, like, you know, over and over again on the media all the time about how, you know, liberals are bad. And that doesn't mean liberals aren't crazy, as far as I'm concerned. That doesn't mean, you know, that people who I speak to don't have some really great things to say or valid points. But I know it can get tiring for people to hear it over and over again after a while. So I try and break the shows up. And I know sometimes a good, strong monologue rant can be fun to listen to and work wonders for the soul. So that's definitely how I begin my shows out now. And anyways, I hope that you check out the, I don't hope it, do whatever the frig you want, all right? Have a good night.